For those here for HB 567, we won't be taking it up. HCR 3.
Where's the prime sponsor?
He is tied up in a hearing.
Is he gonna come?
He can't get away. And I talked to his aide and he said that, the committee's heard testimony on this issue already. On HB 159, it's,
We got somebody wants to testify on?
Why don't we hear from both sides of the fence?
You might as well.
At least one person refresh your memory and give us something to go on here.
Who left the? The prime sponsor isn't here. He's tied up in a committee meeting.
Why don't we just get one for four and one against?
One for and one against on this thing.
On HCR 33?
If everybody's for it, why then?
Who wants to speak on this thing?
Is there anyone out there who wants to speak on House Concurrent Resolution 33? On workers' comp rate making? Yeah, if somebody wants to testify, they're down the hall, we'll take them.
First time I ever had this many in a meeting in the way I want to say something.
Well, they're here for the other bill.
I can say this much, I talked with both management and labor representatives, they support this resolution.
They do? Well, I.
Mr. Chairman, I'll comment on this.
Yeah, go right ahead. We have a quorum and we're taking up House Concurrent Resolution Number 33. We have Jack Fuller, Terry Martin, and Cuddy and myself. You state your name.
Yes, Glenn Lundell, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Labor. As far as HCR Number 33 is concerned, it does achieve a basic purpose, which is to delay anything taking place that would adversely affect employers and their cost situation, at least until further studies of the program on workers' comp, which are called for during this interim session, or have been proposed at least, take place. And I would speak in support of it, and that would be the end of my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're just asking for a delay, and there's no impact on anybody at the present. The impact would be if we did not delay. Is that correct?
That is correct.
That would cost employers how much? What's is there?
Well, by taking the limit off of the amount of income which is used for the calculation, it would obviously increase premiums to employers. This would keep it status quo, which some people like and some people don't like, but it happens to be status quo rather than increasing it at this time.
Would this be a dramatic increase, sir?
In some cases it would be. When you're dealing with certain categories of organizations, it could be a dramatic increase, especially seasonality has quite an effect upon this.
And do I understand this right, that we really don't have all the facts on it yet? Is that one reason for the delay? There's some studies going on.
Well, the actual studies don't necessarily contain themselves just to rate making itself. That's a function of the Division of Insurance, and I'm only speaking peripherally to it, but the other studies as far as the workers' comp program itself could make quite a difference in what the rates eventually become, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Martin. Thank you. Mr. Lada, you're saying that even during the interim while we're doing this study that some of the employers might be affected into a higher rate?
Yes, that's the information we have received from employers and what's been presented, yes.
Do you have any idea of what percentage?
Well,
are they seasonal workers?
It would depend on an organization. It would depend to some degree as compared to the maximum amount now considered, which I'm not prepared to speak to exactly, but to taking that lid off and allowing a premium rate to apply all the way through on the income, on the earnings of individuals.
So then we're not really keeping the status quo. We're going to a new level established by NCCI.
You're keeping the status quo if you, that is, you're supporting keeping the status quo if you pass this resolution. We will be potentially, in some cases, going to a higher rate.
Well, that's why I'm confused. If we're keeping the status quo, why shouldn't everybody remain the same?
They will now.
Oh, okay.
If what you're proposing here was placed into effect, they would remain where they are, pending the completion of the study work as far as workers' comp.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Mm-hmm. Well, I propose to move the bill. If there's nobody else will speak with it.
I don't know. Carbon industry, no sponsor.
They were contacted, I don't know, seeing them here, but I talked to them this morning, Thursday, Martin, about the legislation, about this resolution. And they do, they told me they support it wholeheartedly.
Take a vote?
Yeah.
Excuse me, who did you contact?
I talked with both Norm Gorsuch and Jeannie Klein.
And who?
And Jeannie Klein from AGC, so she's gonna contact.
Does everybody have this one?
Yeah, everybody's got that, HB 5-7.
We have one that's seven, that's 5-6-7.
Everybody has three copies.
Well, is any, is there objection to moving the bill? The resolution?
If I can ask, we haven't had any input from anybody who has any problems with that on any side of the argument, is that correct?
Not the last hearing.
Let me say this, in all the hearings we had on the House Bill 159 at Workers' Comp, there was at least once or twice in those hearings that people did speak to this issue, particularly the teleconferencing with the Kenai area. They spoke very, very strong about that issue, then on the payroll, we even had a special meeting down here with Commissioner Weber, and insurance people and that employer, and some other employer groups, and they spoke to that issue. And they are the people who perform maintenance on oil platforms. And they would be impacted, they're one of the classifications that would be hit the hardest by unlimited payroll. Plus, there's another meeting scheduled for the 27th of this month with the Division of Insurance on the issue.
One last question, what is the best argument against this? I can't see any, but I pose this to the committee.
I haven't heard of any. In fact, Malone, the prime sponsor, feels that they're not being hit fairly. He says, particularly on the them workers where they work 1 week on, one week off, as he explained to me, that they are hit with insurance on their week off, the way I got it. And he just don't feel like it's being done fairly. That's the impetus to his bill.
If I pose one more question, why were we going to go to the unlimited payroll circumstance or situation? There must have been some reason we were going to go to it.
Maybe you could answer that question.
It's an insurance factor. I really wasn't prepared to get into the thing. I don't know how they're rating the situation or how their structure is and the division of insurance on that. But it had to do with the assumption of this National Commission rate making situation, but that would require moving as an unlimited payroll situation without having the opportunity to adjust anything in between.
The National Council on Compensation Insurance basically sets the form to come up with the premiums for workers' comp, and this is a move by the state of Alaska to make compliance with that, since they use that as the organization to determine premiums.
Oh, is this, were we discussing this a month or so ago when we were trying to, none of us knew really how to handle it, but somehow the employers are going to be hit with a higher charge if we don't institute this?
Yeah, this is just asking a delay.
Right on.
Oh, okay, I remember. What happens then? If we don't go to that unlimited payroll and adopt the national standards, then are the employers going to have to pay that higher rate?
If we don't go to the unlimited payroll, they'll stay at status quo until July 1st of 82 if they implement this resolution, which gives us a lot of time to do a lot of things.
Who is? Oh, I see.
This resolution would direct the governor, or ask the governor to stop the Division of Insurance from implementing the program. They're going to intend to do that July 1st of this year. Although they're now talking about a phase-in step, two or three phase-in step.
Okay, excuse me, I'm trying to remember what that was, but as I recall, that's a national, somehow it's nationally mandated that we adopt whatever this unlimited program is, or else the employers have to pay a higher percentage. If we adopt this resolution, what's going to happen? How does that stop the employers from having to pay that, whatever their higher amount is?
Well, I'm not sure. That's why the prime sponsor is supposed to be here. I don't really understand it myself. Do you?
Well, I could just respond by saying that the formula that they use is determined by this national organization is causing the unlimited payroll problem. And there are some states in compliance and some that aren't. They're all moving to that system. And this is an attempt by the state to move to the system of unlimited payroll. They are not necessarily, as my understanding, completely mandated or required to do it, but it's a system that the Council on National Insurance Companies are involved in. And the reason it impacts us, the state of Alaska, so much differently than other states is because of the higher wages which are made during the pipeline era, construction wages and seasons, and things like that. So our employers up here in those kinds of trades are paying a substantially higher premium if they go to unlimited payroll. They're already paying a big increase, and they don't believe they can afford to do another one. That was the testimony they gave. It does not, as I understand, put the workers' comp program in jeopardy with any other organization if we postpone doing it.
Some entity is going to extract some fee out of the employers if this is not adopted. If we don't adopt unlimited payroll, unless this resolution is adopted, is that what happens?
That's what I understand.
So whatever entity it is that's going to extract that penalty from the employers because unlimited payroll is not adopted, that entity has the power not to extract that penalty if they agree with us on this resolution. Is that the case?
Yeah, what we're trying to do here is hold off so Reagan can act.
I guess.
Well, the 27th of this month, they're going to be holding a hearing to adopt the program in some form, one way or the other. And it's the intent of the prime sponsor to have the governor contact the division to come up with a program that is damaging. And this is the notice of that meeting, or that hearing, which will be held in Anchorage on the 27th.
I'd sure feel a lot more comfortable if we had the prime sponsor here to explain this to us and tell us.
I talked to his staff. Apparently, he's tied up in a hearing. He can't get away.
Where does it go from here?
It goes to the rules committee.
Mm-hmm. Well, considering the people I talked to who called me concerning the Workman Compensation Bill 159, and knowing that the back is really on Mr. Malone's, the buried on his back. He has the most critical people pertaining to 159 workman compensation. I'm sure this is a temporary solution in a very touchy problem. And just on the situation I know down there, if Mr. Malone comes up,
I think that's where the bulk of the problem is.
Yeah.
I know I've seen him meeting with him down there in
Hester. I have no objection to you passing this bill out, Mr. Chairman.
I certainly think it's going to solve their problem down there, and I can't think of one gentleman with the oil industry that kept on calling, but...
Are you familiar with this bill?
HCR-33?
What's that, workers' comp?
Yeah.
Somewhat.
Help educate us.
We got all these people here, nobody knows anything.
The question was, somebody's on the impression that if we stop unlimited payroll, then the employers will be forced to pay a penalty because going to unlimited payroll complies with national standards. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what the answer is.
I don't know if there's a penalty.
I don't recall it. Anyone talked about it. Like I said, I talked to management and labor. I didn't talk to the insurance industry. One of the management representatives, also one of his partners, represents insurance. He told me they support the management because they know it's going to be a cost impact. So the groups probably put in people.
Mr. Chairman, I would oppose passing this out of committee until we get somebody who really. I don't feel comfortable with passing it out of committee yet.
Katie just didn't get around to
okay.
No, you guys did 17 pages. Where's the notes on this?
Well, because I haven't done the item yet. He just got done.
Is there anybody here to testify on 567? Okay, well, we'll just set this aside, and we get the prime sponsor up here in this other we'll move along to 567.
Good move, good move.
And we'll they're gonna try to get Hugh Malone to sponsor both of these bills. But if someone wants to take a vote, speak to 567. An act established in Alaska State Supplemental Employment Training Act. Right.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go right ahead.
My name is Glenn Lundell, Deputy Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Labor. I am here to offer comments that support the concept that is presented in House Bill 567. In the course of the last several years, I've had an opportunity prior to joining state government to be involved in employment and training programs all my working life and for the last 12 years in the state of Alaska. One of the major problem areas and difficulties in the state of Alaska that I noticed almost immediately on arrival that deals with an issue that's dear to all of our hearts, and that is a local hire concept, is the preparation level of the workforce that is here in dealing with many of the things that are on the horizon for the state of Alaska. I think it ties, this type of an approach definitely ties to the concept of economic development of the state and the enticement of industry that can be beneficial to the state on a continuing basis to come in and to work here and to develop here. The program that's presented is one that provides a preparatory atmosphere for many of those in the state that have not had that opportunity. Some people have likened this to the CETA program. I would say that it is in some sense, but it certainly has a very great different emphasis. This is an opportunity for the state to more directly influence those things that take place, as opposed to being bound in many cases by national guidelines, which may or may not in different cases apply to the state of Alaska. The involvement that I have had myself before has been not only with private companies in the labor relations and employment and training field, but also as a member of the advisory councils that are there to guide the CETA program. Up to 2 years ago, when I did take the present position under Commissioner Orbeck. Again, the concept and the approach, I think, is a very needed thing. I've seen all the evidence in the world of the continual cooperation between the departments that are involved in this type program. The Department of Labor, the CETA Division of Community and Regional Affairs, and the vocational and training end of the Department of Education. And I think these are very worthwhile approaches. In our comments, which we presented to the sponsor of this resolution, or rather this bill, we did, however, discuss some elements of approach in which we would differ from the original content of the bill. We think that a considerable emphasis has to be placed on the employment opportunity, the labor exchange concept that essentially he has provided as far as the overall state is concerned through organizations such as the Job Service. I won't deal in great detail there because the director of the Employment Security Division is also here and prepared to discuss that and respond more directly. One of the key factors is that over the years, the federal government has sponsored many of these programs, but they seem to proliferate into distinct categorizations where you do have, as opposed to a common approach, you have several organizations involved, which is necessary in the content of the program, but it also increases all the overhead, the administration, and sometimes the confusion of the programs. I think many organizations in the state, whether they are state government, such as the Job Service and the CETA Division, or whether they come from among the nonprofit corporations that provide this service, have a stake in this, and they should be there to operate some of the programs, but there needs to be a tying together concept that directs it toward the occupations that are really going to be needed in the state. Our history is well rooted in the construction industry, and that will continue. But there are other things on the horizon as well that are very important as far as economic development and the employment on a continued basis of our people. I think that this does give us a strong opportunity for the state. As far as the people who might well participate in this, we think that the counseling, the employment-related counseling activities that are called for in the bill are very important. And also the analysis of statistical information that will provide the basis for targeting these things and actually provide information that, on which we get requests weekly and monthly from various companies that may be interested in starting a business or going into it. Our department supports the concept. We have proposed some administrative changes to it as far as the bill, which we think would strengthen it through the cooperative linkage as far as responsibility for performance of functions, as opposed to the way it is currently written. And with that, I'll close my remarks. We open to questions, and we do have others that will speak in more detail on the specific areas.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm not very familiar with this bill, but at a fast glance, it appears to me that most of it is taken up with evaluation and things like that, as opposed to on-the-job training. Maybe my interpretation is wrong. Could you answer that for me, sir?
I think the majority of the effort is taken up with what's called worksite training or preparatory training. I think that to your point about the evaluation of statistical information and so forth, one reason there is a large component there is the tremendous interest that has been expressed by organizations outside of government and also by many members of the legislature with respect to that. There seems to be a lack of confidence in the information on which to base how to target programs like this, and this is part of what the reason for that larger area is there.
About the only thing that I'm familiar in the state with is the Seward Skills Center, which of course is mostly vocational, but it appears that there has been some good come out of that as far as people being prepared to enter the job stream.
I would concur, sir. I think that program has developed into a very fine one. I would also like to add a couple things as far as the area of the institutions and those that are there. The real strength of the vocational training effort in the state of Alaska has been and continues to be the Labor Management Training Trust-sponsored apprenticeship programs. They have been more vital in bringing people into the workforce probably than anything else, where it resulted for sure in a job right behind it. Now, many of the other programs that have developed, possibly in most cases out of CETA programs have, or out of the old Manpower Development and Training Act programs, have achieved quite a bit. But they are not in a direct relation to the employment stream like apprenticeship. It may well be that, and there has been comment, and I won't presume to take the place of those who will have these comments with respect to the effect upon apprenticeship program, but it may also be that there should be some corrective or protective language to ensure that something like this doesn't, in effect, overwhelm some of those existing things. We are very interested in not the expansion per se, but the definition of those programs and the results of them in jobs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am really floored with the fiscal note on this bill. Have you seen it, Mr. Liddell?
Yes, sir. I have seen the fiscal note.
Small one, $18 million, but you know, when you got $6 billion, why worry about that? The reason why I worry is because we passed another bill yesterday that I strongly spoke against, 509. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that one?
Yes, sir.
And that was supposed to be a perfect answer to all of our problems. And if that didn't answer all of our problems, 508 would. And we got so many agencies now that are going to train and going to help and solve our unemployment problems that the major employment that we have, this here is about 80 bodies, as I see it, that are going to be employed to... that's quick count. It might be more. That's the quickest one to solve. It might be more. For $18 million, maybe we should get more than 80 bodies out of it to help other people that are unemployed. But as you know, we got the skills center, we got vocational ed, we got career centers, we got Kenai Community College that are doing a great job of community, you know, relating with the industry's needs and directly employing people. We got our private industries, we got Alaska Plain was doing a good job, we got, if I gave some thought to it, I bet I can come up with at least 15 groups now, mostly either federal or privately funded, or state funded, including CETA. Now this one said that it's not going to duplicate CETA's work. And so I'm wondering, I'm just floored with so many great proposals coming around to solve the problem. It looks like we're not going to have any unemployed people to work with because we've found programs of some other nature.
Mr. Chairman, there's a partial response to Representative Martin, and I will ask that Mr. Caldwell may, if he is here from the research and analysis section, I think that he will be indicating that some of the elements of that were present in the fiscal note for House Bill 509 are also present here, and obviously these will depend one on the other. If one is passing, then much of the work in there would take care of what is called for here, and so you would, there's some trade-offs, that, and we are not permitted to assume that one bill or another is going to pass when making a fiscal note, and so they are required to stand on their own in that event. That's why you have very perceptively spotted some duplication that is there.
Well, nothing that we're talking about here is home surveys. It's so much, as you're saying, duplication is going on. The U.S. Census Bureau just spent a year and a half trying to find the special Alaskan problems. And I know they did an extra good job of going into the rural communities and seeing what we've known for the past 10, 15 years. I've known people unemployed, you know.
Yes.
And now we see surveys here, especially home surveys in rural areas. Don't we believe each other's reports? Then also the migration of people and the relocation of people disturbed me too. I know we were talking about Alaska High, but we weren't necessarily talking about them being relocated. The problem is that, like in many village communities, we have a job going on there, and my feeling has always been that I don't care if it costs a little more to put those people that live there to build that building, whatever it may be, rather than ship them all out from Anchorage to Fairbanks, and those people are still left unemployed. So, in relocating, what would you take that to mean?
Make sure I'm on the same thing on relocating as you are. You're talking on which page of the note here?
Well, actually, it's in the bill itself here. Also,
oh,
come
okay.
To think of it.
Where
page one, line 28. Is this just for the training and then send them back to where there's no jobs, or is it relocating to working areas?
Essentially, that is consistent with a previous policy that has been taken as far as the availability of people for training and jobs. You see, many of the residents of the state are financially unable to participate in some of the training programs or even get to where a job can take place, even if there's a dispatch, let's say, to a job for them, without some assistance. We saw that during major projects in the past. I can only assume that it takes place from as a regular course of events in some cases. It is a matter of a policy approach, a decision as to what type of support should be provided. This has been proposed in this bill. Mr. Zillig, who is available here also, the Director of the Employment Security Division, is prepared to discuss it as well as a point here. There were major, if you want to call it relocation efforts, or making available type efforts during the oil pipeline years made for residents of various rural areas of the state who would otherwise have been unavailable for work, and the job that they filled might have gone to a non-resident. Mm-hmm. There are goods and bads, Mr. Martin, in all of that, and I'm not saying that anything is a panacea or a complete solution.
We just passed a gigantic vocational education program through in the HES committee, and I'm still not sure how I voted on that. And I would have second thoughts that I've seen this one here come along, and that I've seen 508 and 509 coming through, and just we'll be well employed with the government people.
That's where Cheryl makes sense. All 5%.
Jack, do you have something?
No.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You didn't have anything. State your name.
My name is Lawrence Slay. I represent the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. I am the coordinator in the apprenticeship program in Anchorage. I am not against this. I haven't had really time to digest it completely, but I do have a problem with it. I do have a problem in that it says they will be contacting with employers or other persons or institutions or agencies to provide apprenticeship or job training classroom instruction related to apprenticeship or job training for persons who are eligible to participate in the worksite training program. And I have a problem with that because in our program, we deduct 25 cents an hour from every electrical worker in the state to pay for our program. And we've been doing it since 1963. Not that amount, but it costs us approximately $10,000 to put an apprentice through our apprenticeship program. When we go through the selection system and go through all the efforts to train apprentices, and the state of Alaska is going to give monies to people who are non-union, who have not participated in the program to pay for it as we do, then I have a problem with that. There are some areas that if we're going to subsidize other people, I think that you should consider organized labor along with that. We've worked with the CETA program, and I'll give you an example of one CETA program that we just did. We were contacted by ABCP to go out in Bethel, and they asked us to conduct an apprenticeship training program out there. I went out and screened approximately 30 people and ended up with a class of 10. CETA paid for the instructor. The Bureau of Indian Affairs paid for the room and board, and ABCP picked up the classroom rental. And as a something for us, they told us that they would keep all of their work union, all of their electrical work union. While we were conducting a class, they built their headquarters across the street non-union while we're running the class. And I do have a problem with that because we have worked very hard at training people and working. And one of the things that's a viable program, once we select somebody into an apprenticeship program, he never has to go out and look for work again. And we have apprentices out of work at present. But those people that are on our books are available, they've been trained, they're ready to go to work. And when we start another program, a dual program such as the state of Washington or some other places have started, it's usually non-union. There is no policing of minorities and non-union construction in the state. Only union contractors get policed because they're organized. I would like to request that before this goes to finance, that I be given some time, a notice. I'll go back to the Coordinators Association, which is from every labor union in the state that do training, and have them go through it and look it over and see if it's something that they can live with. And I'm not saying that I oppose it because certainly there needs to be some financing to train people. I'm not opposed to that. But I am opposed to anything that tears down what we have.
What was the page and the line number you were referring to, sir?
Referring to page 2 at the bottom and the top of page 3.
Line what?
Line section 29 and 1, 2, and 3 on the next page.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Since we have a gentleman here, could I ask you to look into 508 and 509? They're not here, sir.
Okay.
But I think the unions would be most interested in those two. Did speak on you on the floor yesterday and doing the job that was not government. Okay. It'll get me voted through the House, though.
Any other questions? If not, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
It's not my intention to have this bill moved today anyway. Is there anybody else to...
I'm Jewel Jones, representing the municipality of Anchorage. And as such, the municipality has been involved for well over 13 to 15 years in employment and training programs, initially with the old Neighborhood Youth Corps program, which was folded into the CETA legislation, and at that time with the former borough and city and former PREP programs and now the CETA programs, we have a tremendous amount of interest and concern in terms of the continuation and further development and refinement of employment and training programs. We certainly agree in concept that there should be an Alaska State Supplemental Employment and Training Program. We have had both success and failure in working with the federal programs, and certainly as Mr. Lundell has already stated, once we are so heavily tied into federal, national concerns and national mandates, very often, or more the case, more often than not, they have not suited our needs or met the needs of the residents of our communities. A couple of comments, we'd like to certainly see some specific amendments to this legislation. We have had a good working relationship with both the Department of Community and Regional Affairs and the Department of Labor. We would like to see, however, some additional recognition for coordination and relationship with the Department of Education. They have certainly a big stake in the employment counseling or counseling aspects with young people, and this bill does present a number of options related to youth programs and counseling, but we certainly recognize that there must be an awful lot of emphasis for young people to have work and training opportunities. We, and all of you as employers at some point, have experience working with adults who somewhere in that background develop some pretty bad work habits. And if we can devise and strengthen those programs that provide good work and training opportunities for young people with an emphasis, certainly, to stay in school as long as possible, we think that that's very important. Most assuredly, in, I guess it's on line 21, page 2, there is recognition to cooperate with state and federal agencies, which we recognize as being very important, but we would certainly want to include local governments, particularly an area like the municipality of Anchorage, that, as I said, has had a great deal of experience in working with various agencies, that there must be an incorporation there. More specifically, we would like to see, both in the coordination effort, more direct involvement with the local area, the local government, in being the sponsors of those kinds of programs in areas where municipal governments want to either be involved or stay involved. Certainly in the areas, again, as be it employment employment programs, we have those. We have a tremendously large youth program, which will certainly be diminished if the Reagan proposals continue to pass through Congress, as they seemingly are, but we will still have employment programs. Therefore, any additional support or supplemental assistance that would come to the state, we would certainly like to see that money come to the municipality to work together with the existing programs and would therefore keep the administrative cost of those programs to a minimum. We're basically saying we don't want to see another bureaucracy set up in a community that's already doing that work and working at cross purposes. We have all had experiences with people certainly being confused by the numbers of programs. We certainly need to look at eligibility requirements. We would have some of the same kinds of concerns as far as we're working with apprenticeship programs now, and to have other programs developed that may have different kinds of criteria. The most important thing to be helpful to people will be the need to coordinate those programs, and those would be a few of the amendments that we would suggest. We haven't had an opportunity to look at the fiscal note yet, and we've heard different versions of that, but again, we do believe that a coordinated effort with existing service providers and most specifically with local governments would certainly be a tremendous administrative cost savings.
Okay, would you send us yours in writing?
Yes, I will.
And your suggestions on the bill?
Certainly.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions?
decrease.
If not, we'll slip back momentarily here to HCR 33 and the prime sponsors here. And
that's one we've got up here. Intern youth employment counselors in schools and vocational aspiration programs. Oh, we've got a lot of duplication going on there. That's why they seem to be issued.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Hugh Malone, representative from House District 13, and I appreciate your coming back to House Concurrent Resolution Number 33. The House Concurrent Resolution 33 was introduced because the legislation and changes in the workers' comp law that were hoped to be adopted in this session of the legislature probably won't be. And one of the things that will be affected by that is, of course, the workers' compensation insurance rates. The resolution would ask that in view of the fact that the review legislative changes in the program are not going to be accomplished during this session, that the implementation of calculation of rates based on unlimited payroll be deferred until the beginning of the next fiscal year, until next July. And that's the thing in a nutshell. Now, I would try to answer specific questions if people have.
I don't understand the problem too well. We're under some constraint. Is that true, to pass something by a certain date in order to avoid a penalty? Is that, I'm trying to get the background that leads us to this bill so I can understand this bill a little better.
Okay. trying to summarize it, that you have, of course, different rates apply to different types of occupations. And there's some substantial questions have been raised about how rates are calculated and what they should be, and also what the, there's been some questions raised as to how, what kind of law we should have too. But the resolution was introduced because in a particular case, the rates that apply to a class of employers and employees, and the ones that came to my attention were the oil field service companies, appear to be high, and if they go to an unlimited payroll calculation, they're going to be much higher. And that without having had a chance to review and revise the law and go into some of the things that I think needs to be done there, I think that the state and the legislature should give to the State Division of Insurance both more authority and more resources to analyze workers' comp rate filings, for one thing, particularly the system of setting aside reserves and charging those into the rates. But that isn't, apparently it's not going to be done this session. So if the rates go on an unlimited payroll basis, they may increase substantially for this class of employers. And without having both the legislature and the Division of Insurance having made a determination, in fact, that the system under which those rates are developed and charged makes a whole lot of sense, and there's some evidence to the contrary, that then we should request the department to not allow the unlimited payroll base for the calculation of workers' comp rates to go into effect until that we have the chance to make that review. Go ahead.
What is unlimited rate? What does that mean?
Well, that means that the entire amount of the compensation that's paid would be incorporated into the base for the payroll tax, for the workers' compensation insurance, not payroll tax, but it's equivalent. So. And that, for instance, this class of employers is paying a premium of almost 19% on a weekly maximum of $560, and the going to unlimited will probably roughly double the amount of workers' compensation insurance premiums that they pay. And so behind that is the question is, how are the rates established? What sort of procedures are determined are used in determining the premiums that these people are charged? Is it based on the experience of the companies? Are the reserve practices, do they make sense in the face of the claims and the actual amounts of payments? And without trying to get at that, what we should do is get at those questions, but without being able to do that, during this session, I'm asking the legislature to request the governor to direct the division to leave the rate calculation based on a limited payroll until next year.
What happens if we don't? If their rates are not raised, there must be some reason they're being raised. And if they're not raised, then who's going to come in and fill in the void and pay the amount that would have been there with an increased premium dollars?
Well, I can't answer that question.
Is there going to be a problem then in the next year if the rates are not allowed to rise? Is money going to be available to pay claims? What's going to happen?
Well, I can't answer that question either, but I can say that if the unlimited payroll calculation is used as a basis for charging at the current rates, then the workers' compensation insurance premiums paid by this class of companies is probably going to roughly double. And that is maybe not a legitimate thing to allow to happen without being sure or having some very good reason to believe that those rates are directly related to the requirements for payments of liabilities under workers' compensation insurance. And I don't have any solid information that they're not, but there's some indication that maybe they're not, and that the amount of claims against the companies that I've been able to identify don't seem to stack up at all against the amount of reserves that are being developed.
I know that some of the same people that have been talking to you have told me that they cannot afford under this situation that goes into effect hire any more employees. They'd rather keep them on overtime rather than they can't afford to do it under that situation that's gotten them down to where it's very, very critical.
We've had a lot of workman's comp bills go through this committee, and I can't remember which bill number it goes with which title, but I do remember some of the concepts, and there are two of them. I'm trying to find out if your bill associates with ones. There's one that required us to do something, or the employers would pay some surcharge. Does this bill relate to that, or does this bill relate to...
No, I think that's second injury fund. We had
94.
Okay, so this doesn't relate to that one. Does this relate to the one that would give employers an option to self-insure or to do some other programs? Does this relate to that one?
159.
Well, it might indirectly, but in that if the employers could self-insure and that it looks to them like they could substantially reduce their insurance costs. But what it's really concerned with is a change to the base for the charges for workers' compensation insurance premiums.
Any more questions?
Mr. Senator Malone, I guess I've received more complaint from one gentleman in your area, more so than anyone else, about the 159 and the fears he had thereof. And it was the oil-related industry, and I can't recall his name, I tell you. You think, well, have you had a chance to talk to the people in your community that were worried about the 159 in relationship to this resolution?
Sure. Yeah, they've had the opportunity, they've had a chance to talk to me, and they took it. So I've had the chance to talk to those people. The same people had another suggestion that instead of putting in a resolution holding off on going unlimited payroll, that I should introduce a bill setting up a state workers' compensation insurance program. And they point out to me that was done in some other states, and that that way we, whether the rates were high or low, we know why they were where they were. And I said, well, that, you know, that has its own set of problems, and that if we do have people in the business, then what we ought to do is have regulation to the point where we do make sure that those businesses are conducted in such a way that there is competition and there is some sort of relation between the cost to the consumer and the benefits that we receive.
But right now they're satisfied with the resolution. Because we can't do that.
Well, yeah. Mr. Chairman, this is strictly a stopgap measure, and the best thing to do, in my opinion, would be to make sure that the rate structures and the ratings that are established bear direct relationship to the cost of providing for workers' compensation payments, but I'm not sure that's going on now. Now, I pursued that to the point where I was sent one rate filing that was proposed to the division. Looked into that. Of course, I couldn't understand that any more than I could Greek. But and I'm not entirely convinced that the Division of Insurance does either. But I think that's. That may be one of the problems, that they don't have the resources to analyze filing. I think there's a problem in the structure of how employers are classified. And I think that that we ought to have probably at a minimum that the either the state government makes that decision or the people that have to pay the rates make that decision. And right now, the decision is made by the insurance industry.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you. Everybody satisfied? I got a motion to move the bill out. Any objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered. You, did you want to speak to your other bill, 567, and all we got here, we'll just take a testimony on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 567 was introduced for a couple of reasons. One is that the federal programs, or at least the funding for the federal employment training programs, appear to be on the decline. And in Alaska, we've been faced with the difficulty of having people with the requisite skills and training to take jobs that develop in the Alaska economy. And what this bill would do is, I'm sure you've looked at already, would establish state employment training program. It's not intended to try to cure the unemployment problem in Alaska, but it is intended to try to give those people that are interested enough to participate in a program an opportunity to improve their skills to the point where they can either advance in their current job or to learn the basic skills that they require in an entry-level position. One of the issues here in this whole question is whether the state should simply provide a law that, given if we want to do anything about it, whether the state should simply provide a law that recognizes the federal programs as they have been in existence and funds those programs from state general funds, or whether the state should make some changes that maybe people would think would be more directly aimed at the situation in the state of Alaska rather than on a national basis, and put our money into that program. And this bill falls, I guess, into that latter category. Probably the most important part of the legislation starts on page 2, down with line 15, where it's the bill would assign the Department of Community and Regional Affairs responsibility to enter into contracts or agreements to establish training programs and to reimburse employers for costs of training people in worksite training programs. Goes on to provide in the next section that the department specifically sets out the intent under a worksite training program that the department would have the responsibility and authority to contract with employers and other persons or institutions or agencies for job training and apprenticeship training. And probably the other important provision in the legislation is that the funds under the program would be provided on a competitive basis. They wouldn't be necessarily allocated out to existing organizations in the state, but there would be a review take place, and the people who could best operate the program, whether they're public or private, hopefully then would be the ones that receive the funds and operate the program, rather than allocate whatever money might be appropriated to all the existing efforts without review. That's the guts of the bill, I think. Now I could stop. Maybe there's specific questions. I don't know how you need to go into.
Have you seen the fiscal notes?
I had an opportunity to review to see the fiscal notes on the bill. There's a fiscal note from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs as well as the Department of Labor on the legislation. And if the state is going to do anything near at the level of the federal effort, which is being curtailed, then it's going to cost a lot of money. And so the fiscal notes are pretty high. I suppose it could be reduced, but I don't have any specific comments on the fiscal notes because I haven't had a chance to discuss them with the departments.
Yeah, I just was skipping through them. I haven't either, but they are quite high. And I was just wondering if you had in mind when you introduced this legislation that would be taken over at the level that CETA and all those have been.
Not initially, and I don't think the fiscal notes reflect an amount of money equal to the federal, you know, the federal commitment that there has been in the first fiscal year. Mm-hmm. I think without looking at the fiscal notes, I think that we come close to it in the projections and the fiscal notes for the second year of the program.
Mm-hmm.
Martin.
Thank you. Representative Malone, in the fiscal note establishing the 52 position, they make it clear that it's not to duplicate what CETA is doing. So it, at first I thought it was that too, but he said it in his narrative, it's not.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, go ahead.
What, I don't know what specific plan the committee has on holding hearings on the legislation. When we do get to the point of, or maybe a later point because they don't have an amendment right now, it was pointed out to me that one of the things that we probably would want to continue is a council or commission or committee that had responsibilities and duties similar to the Manpower Services Council that now exists in the state, and I think that's a good idea, and that is something that I think probably needs to be addressed in the legislation.
Okay, thank you. You any other questions? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I know you're tied up there, but.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to testify before the committee.
Sure. I have so many bills in the mail.
We've got a few more minutes. Was there anybody else want to testify? Would you like?
I'm Sylvia Carlson, Special Assistant to the President for AFN. And I'm directly working with the Human Resources Board of AFN, which has representatives on it from all 12 nonprofit Native associations throughout the state. Those Native associations have been, during the past several years, delivering human services type programs in the rural areas, particularly in those areas where there is not organized government. You received a telegram from me last week regarding House Bill 567 addressing some of the concerns that we had with the language in there. We felt that the language needed to be a little bit stronger, which would provide an opportunity for the Native associations to compete in for the contracts. However, we will support House Bill 567 in its present form, and that's basically my testimony, and we hope it will move out of committee soon.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Do you want to testify?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Lois Lind, and I'm the Director of the CETA Division in the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. We have been administering the CETA program around the state, excluding the municipality of Anchorage portion, since 1975. It has been located in different agencies, but it is presently in the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. We have done so through the 5 regional offices, one that serves the Nome region, one serves the Bethel region, the Fairbanks area, South Central area, and we have our office in Anchorage, and one in Southeastern, and the office is located in Juneau here. In providing the CETA program around the state, we've found a number of times that people ask us a lot of questions. We've got a lot of unemployed people, and we've got training programs on one hand. On the other hand, you pick up the newspaper or you go down to job service and there are a lot of jobs that are available for people. And so what you've got is something that's also a nationwide problem, a lot of unemployed people and yet a lot of jobs that are open and offered. And many of them are realistic job offers. Some of them probably are not. They're people who are kind of fishing. They can find the right person. In the work we've done, we found that there are many times when our program is addressed at entry-level jobs, and our program is addressed at a very special group of people who are economically disadvantaged, and many of whom have not had good work skills. And many of the jobs, on the other hand, that are being offered and that are out there are not entry-level. They require more skills than often we can provide through such a program as CETA. So I guess the issue comes up in that if the state is going to play a role, perhaps it can assist the current residents to gain better skills so they can take some of those non-entry or higher level jobs so that we don't have to always go out and recruit from outside of state, which an employer needs the best person that an employer can get, And if you can't find somebody who has the exact skills you want and you can get somebody from outside, it's a lot cheaper for the employer to do that rather than spend a lot of time training somebody on the job. Our point is that we do support this bill. There probably are some technical problems with it or some, you know, concerns that we hadn't even thought of in reviewing it. But we do think that we can use something like this as an effective tool to help employers gain skilled people, particularly working on the job. We think that's another very good mechanism. We do some of this through CETA, but we can't normally help an employer who has not an entry-level job, and we can't help an individual who has skills, who has a good work history, get more skills in order to take the job the employer might go outside for. I'd like to speak real strongly in favor of the fact that training on the job is a real productive way to go. Even with the CETA program, we found that successful. It's economical compared to some of the other kinds of training we've provided. We do think people can work at the same time they're learning, and we think employers are the best people to know what the individual should know in that job, and the employers can do the best job in assisting somebody to have that. We believe that if there is a classroom training kind of program needed, the employers need to have a stronger say in the design of that program, and in some cases participating. That's been a basis of apprenticeship programs in this state and in other places, and it's been a very successful thing, and often we don't find that in other kinds of programs. Representative Martin indicated that, used the example of the Kenai program down there in the oil area, and that's probably one of the best examples we have in the state of industry participating actively in designing a curriculum and continuing to work so that the people coming out of that program have the kinds of skills the employers want. We would like to, if this program passes, encourage more of that on the part of other employers in working with existing programs to make those programs more responsive to the employer's needs.
You know, in my life of working, I found that most people that get more training on the job than for what the job calls for than they do going into formal training somewhere and then going on the job. In other words, once a person gets a job, generally speaking, they don't know what to do, basically. Anybody that goes on a particular job, unless it's an exact skill that he's called for, he has to do a certain amount of learning, even he's a skilled worker. And because every job is different, and it takes a bit of innovativeness, in other words, to fall into it. And it seems to me like these employers could employ people, and then if they wanted to send them on out to further skills, they could, because I notice a lot of times people go out and they get trained as a heavy-duty operator, equipment operator, and then obviously he's right out of school, or he's just off the street, and he goes and he learns how to do the working knobs and all this equipment and stuff, but he hasn't had that basic skill of being on a job.
Excuse me.
And that's where it's all at. And sometimes they just drift off and never go into heavy equipment. You end up doing something else. And it seems like a lot of it's wasted in a lot of instances, you know. And I just wonder if you found that so or not.
That's why I think we really support the on-the-job training portion. You can combine it with the classroom training if in some areas it's needed. Sometimes people need some formal classroom situation to help with the on-the-job training program, but we think that people do learn better on the job, and it's more meaningful, and it's a way to relate what you have learned theoretically in a classroom. And it's the most economical way, and the employer usually gets then what he wants, as opposed to getting someone who's completed a program and then hope that they can learn.
Yeah, just to relate that, you know, I'm a barber, and when I went through barber's college, we spent 6 months studying everything else besides what related to cutting hair, shaving, whatever. And any bloody idiot could learn that in a week, what he needed to do, but then they had muscle of the head, circulatory systems, and God knows what else involved. And 25 years I've been a barber, and I've never had to use that junk, you know. And it it seems like they teach a lot of non-essential stuff with this training stuff, you know. And, it seems involved in a lot of stuff. I talked to dentists that tell me that, it's been years of stuff you never use, you know. And, a lot of training on a lot of different things that way.
I agree. That's why I think that employers should be more involved in some of those programs in helping design it and maybe participating in part of it. Because the employer knows what he wants from an employee, and maybe the basic curriculum is fine. Maybe some things need to be adapted or cut out.
Mark.
Thanks, sir. You're with CNR now.
Right.
And involved in the CEDA program.
Right.
Could you tell me how many people you have now in training under CEDA statewide?
In just our program, the Balance of State program, excluding the municipality of Anchorage?
Yes, ma'am.
I'll have to turn around and ask if my staff knows right now.
1,500?
No. The CEDA program was comprised of a number of components. You know, it had public service employment, which was the largest component, and most people are most familiar with that. And that is the component that is being eliminated from the CEDA program. In addition, then, some of those were considered training positions because people were theoretically learning while they were working. They had other components that are going to remain in place. They have the ability to do classroom training for people who meet the national income criteria. And we do run on-the-job training programs like that. So those are the components that are left that we're talking about. Those people eligible for this are only people who meet the very strict income guidelines set by the federal government, much of which up here is not always applicable. We find a lot of people who are strongly motivated who don't have the resources to do something, but they make that very small cutoff difference and they can't get assistance.
Read my essay, Mr. Chairman. In the preliminary report by CNR, they said even though considering starting problems this year here, that they will reach 3,500 people for the initial cost of about $18 million. Then next year for 83, they're going to request $29,600,000, and they're going to reach 6,800 people. Do you think that's practical?
Well, if you consider that part of the bill talks about youth programs, Representative, a good deal of those people, we wouldn't know how many because it would be on a competitive basis, and unless the committee or the legislature gave us some direction to how to divide that money up for each component. But a good number of them might be youth, and youth would be participating for maybe 2 or 3 months, mainly in the summer, and trying to get a career of vocational exploration and exposed to what the labor market is and the kinds of jobs that are out there. If you look at roughly maybe half of those people as youth, yes, I think it is possible.
But another reason I had that in mind is not just what CEDA is doing now and what they envision, because many of our community colleges are reaching these same youth. Our skills center is reaching the same youth. Career centers are reaching the same youth. Then many of our unions are doing a tremendous job in reaching young adults. And I just felt there were just so many out there that it can be reached. I mentioned before, it looks like we're going to have more government employees trying to reach these people. Eventually, it's going to be no one there.
To reach. It does look that way. I think.
That's the whole game plan.
That's the whole game plan, but they're going to be fighting over that one body. He's mine. Well, let's refer to each other.
Well, you know, working on the pipeline, that was the biggest on the job training effort I ever seen. Boy, I'm telling you, there was guys, including myself, went up there, didn't know get up from sit down. And the ones that was innovative and was willing to learn and jumped right in and tried, they're the ones that made it. The ones that never had any aptitude to try to learn, more or less quit and took off. And is there anything in your training to teach people how to get into a job and try to do it? You know, I mean, that's man, them old Texans from down there come up there, these young bucks come up there, they didn't know how to handle them kids, you know. And they, it wasn't a complex job either, you know, it just...
I think that's a real important point, and yes, there are in most CETA programs that exist, a lot of time is often spent with individuals trying to make them aware of work ethic, make them aware of the fact that to hold a job you have to be there on time, you have to do what the employer expects. You know, you can't show up one day and not show up the next day. The employer has a job to do, they need that reliable individual to be there. That's part of what goes along with providing this program. And that's part of what goes along with the vocational programs that are intended for youth, because one of the problems we have is youth also have to learn this kind of thing. Not only being exposed to different kinds of jobs to help them make a better choice, they might find out that they don't like doing what they thought they would like doing, but they have to understand that there are certain things that go along with the world of work, and that everybody has to use those same standards.
Is there any questions? Okay, thank you very much. We're running out of time here.
That's interesting.
Why don't you send some ideas on, ma'am? Why don't you send some ideas in writing? Okay, thank you. Thanks for all attending.
Mr. Chairman, do you anticipate there'll be further hearings on this bill?
Probably will.
Mm-hmm. I should think so. I think that bill needs to work.
Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you.
Being notified.
We've been in session continuously for a couple weeks now.
Yeah.
We're all on an odd job training.
We're on a job training.
I don't know how you evaluate the outcome.
I'm sure there was a chance to qualify. I just want to say, obviously, our labor is changing.